I'm Katie, riding the number 11 bus on Lincoln Avenue, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Why, thank you, Katie. Enjoy your lovely bus ride down Lincoln Avenue. Good morning. Welcome to Outside the Loop. This is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I'm Mike Steven. This is show number 588. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. We're broadcasting live, as we always do, from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue in the Tribune Tower in downtown Chicago. Be sure to hit us up on Twitter at Outside the Loop and download the podcast of this show for free. You could subscribe through iTunes or just get it through the WGN Radio app. Lots to do on the show today. Coming up a little later on, we will head over to the near west side of Chicago to visit a local interactive design firm to hear about all these cool things that they do. And I'll tell you what, they're called M1 Interactive, and I was over there recently and just playing around with all sorts of screens, and they've got this giant touch screen Twitter wall. It's really cool. And then there's I got to design my own Batmobile on this giant TV screen. It was pretty cool. So we'll learn all about what's going on at M1 Interactive. Before that, you know, we are having a conversation, I think, nationally and locally about immigration these days in this country. And we will check in with a local organization who gives some assistance to the immigrant community. They're based in Pilsen, and they're called the Resurrection Project. So we've talked to them before. We will see how the immigrant community in Chicago is faring with all of the news that's coming out of Washington. And we will check in with our good pal, Steve Krakow, local musician and artist and music historian, for another Secret History of Chicago Music. This week, profiling blues musician Daddy Stovepipe. That is a fantastic blues name. And get this, he's one of the first blues musicians ever recorded, born in 1867. So we will learn all about the history of Daddy Stovepipe. We say good morning right now to the producer of this program. His name is Colin Seaman.
Good morning, Mike.
What's up? How are you?
Do you think Katie's going to the march? Jumping on the bus?
Maybe. Taking the 11 bus down there? All right. I have to mention this. Right now, you know, I don't know if, Colin, you know all about Instagram, right? You're hip to the Instas.
Sure.
The old Instagram. I enjoy some Instagram. WGN Radio is on Instagram, and we do this thing. It's called the WGN Instagram Takeover, where various hosts and personalities will take over the Instagram feed. And so today, for 24 hours, I started this morning, I am taking over the WGN Radio Instagram feed, so you can go check it out. It's just WGN Radio, at WGN Radio on Instagram, and you can follow the radio station, but I will, yours truly, I'm in the driver's seat for this Instagram takeover. And so if you go there right now, you can see some behind the scenes of how we do this show. So this morning, there's one really great one of right after I woke up at 4:30. Oh, that's a treat. That's a treat. Frame that one. Save it. But then there's some behind-the-scenes stuff here with Colin. And so, yeah, that's what we're doing. So I'll be doing this the rest of the day, actually.
And you're doing more OTL stuff today.
I am. That's right.
Nice little tease there.
Oh, I have such a long day. yeah, that's right. So I'll be recording some Outside the Loop segments. You'll be able to check that out. again, go to the Instagram page, WGN Radio, at WGN Radio for Instagram. And yeah, I got to say, by the way, I follow a lot of people on Instagram. One of those, this is my, I feel like the oldest old dude, I always say when I make these complaints. I follow Rahm Emanuel on Instagram. What's up with politicians not wearing ties anymore? I feel like if you're a politician and you have a suit on, you're like 90% there. If you're a guy, throw the tie on as well. Rauner does this as well. Like, oh, I'm just one of you, one of the old, you know, I'm just part of you, the old crew here. I'm just one of the old, you know, average Joes. I'm not going to wear a tie. And it looks ridiculous. They're behind the podium giving these speeches and they don't have a tie on.
I mean, I don't know about that. I don't think you need a tie. I need results. I don't need ties.
Look, I need the necktie.
I need results.
I get it, Colin. I get it. But I need the necktie because it looks ridiculous. And I get it. Like, you're meeting the folks. You're pressing the flesh. You're shaking hands. And you're going to a school. But then on the mayor's story on Instagram, then he goes and gives a speech on policy. And he's the only one in the room not wearing a tie. Come on now. Come on now.
I've seen ties in a couple of instances now. I know exactly what you're talking
about. By the way, Dave Schwann's in the newsroom. Hi,
good
Dave.
Good morning. Good morning. I just wanted to jump in
real
quick here just to say that I know what you're saying. I actually have noticed this myself. But I've seen, now that the campaign is really getting up to full steam, more and more instances of folks wearing ties. J.B. Pritzker and the governor as well. So, you know, it kind of comes and goes. Then you see the governor in blue jeans.
Right.
So,
right. And look, I'm not saying that you shouldn't dress down or, you know, you can be casual. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that especially with the governor, I've noticed that the dude never likes to wear a tie anymore. And trust me, I know he can afford the tie. Same with Rahm. I know you guys can afford these ties. And I get it. If you're going to the state fair, cool, wear your jeans. But, you know, when you go to make a speech, and seriously, or like you're at the podium and everybody behind you is suited up wearing a tie, and you're the only one, I mean, it's totally obvious. Now, to Colin's point, we need some results.
You know what I need, Mike?
What do you need?
I need you to cut to break.
Oh, we need to go to a break? See, this is the behind-the-scenes stuff that you get on the Instagram feed. Colin was giving me messages in my headphones to take a break, and I was just ignoring him. But, all right, we'll take a short break. When we come back, lots more to do here on Outside the Loop. So happy that you are here with us this morning. I'm Mike Steven here on 720 WGN. There's the bass, 720 WGN. Good morning, Mike Steven here along with you on Outside the Loop. That is this program. Right now, listening to some local music from the band Little Church. You can check out littlechurch.bandcamp.com for their website. They're playing a gig this Wednesday, January 24th at Shuba's. It's a great room at the corner of Belmont and Southport in Chicago. It is a free show, so you want to check that out. Some free local music. Each week, you know I love to feature local music, and this week, hearing some tunes from Little Church. There's so much innovation going on in Chicago, and you know, recently I went to this place, and it was such a cool experience. It was called M1 Interactive. M1 Interactive, and it was on the near west side of the city in the very industrial area. You would never know this place is there. But M1 Interactive is an interactive design firm. They do all kinds of really neat projects for some pretty big clients outside of Chicago as well, all over the world. And we've got some pictures of my experience from M1 Interactive. We are tweeting those out this morning on our Twitter handle at Outside the Loop, so you can check out those pictures. We'll also post them on Facebook. But I was over there recently, and this is what it sounds like. I'll tell you what, you never know what you're going to find when you're in the Fulton Market / West Townish neighborhood. We're not quite sure because, you know, realtors. That's where we are right now here at Ashland and Carroll at the headquarters of M1 Interactive. And I'm here with Brian Dressel, who is the president and the owner of M1 Interactive. We're here in this conference room in this space that is this company that I've never quite been in something like this. This is pretty fun. Brian, thanks for having us over. We are in a very industrial area of Chicago, but you walk into here, and immediately, one of the first thing I walked in was design your own Batmobile, this giant TV screen on the wall, which is touch screen. And I could design my own Batmobile by touching the screen, and then you could like shoot the weapons that you put on there. Your company, this is the stuff you do, not just Batmobiles, but you do all kinds of crazy like video projects and art and design. I mean, how do you even begin to tell people what you do?
That's a big challenge.
It is.
I get asked that question quite a bit. And I have a different answer every time. I think it depends on who's asking and what their purpose of asking is.
So, like, if we walk in here and let's say, I know you deal with a lot of bigger clients, but, I mean, what's the elevator speech? Like, what do you tell people that you do?
Well, we're an immersive design company, so we will take we get random calls from clients all the time asking for what is the newest, coolest, crazy thing out there, or we need some crazy design, you know, some project for a trade show. We need some permanent installation done that focuses on technology to bring people in the door. Yet we have to somehow relay their message and their narrative to help sell their product or service, whatever that may be.
So really what you are doing here is you are helping clients who come to you, people who come to you, and they say, we want to tell a story. And I, you know, that whole storytelling thing, I think, especially in 2018, I mean, that's big. And the stuff that does well, the stuff that sells and what connects with people is really a lot of times based on a good story. So you are trying to tell a story, but you happen to do it with, like, I would say this is pretty cutting edge technology, high tech stuff.
Thanks. We try to tap into pop culture and, you know, whatever current technology is out there. We're not really focused on the actual technology. We're more concerned with the story and with the message. So we try to figure out from our clients, what are they trying to say or pitch with their product? And also, who is their audience? So we can help devise something that's going to work. We try not to get stuck on the specific technology because it may be a flash in the pan. It might be something that's just a fad. It's going to go away in 2 weeks. So by the time we actually build something to showcase, that technology is already old. They're on to the next thing.
And now that you've said we're not really all that focused on technology, you happen to have a pretty extensive technology department here. I mean, you've got a shop where you have this laser cutter. You've got all kinds of tools and technology. You've got giant monitors all over. I mean, seriously, all over this place. We were playing with them earlier, a giant touchscreen Twitter wall of the world that you can manipulate with your hands. I mean, you do have technology here.
Yes, we do. I sound like the biggest hypocrite right now. we do have a lot of technology, and we do utilize it. We try to just be focused with our use of the technology. And like I said, we try to focus on the story first or the narrative. And when I say that, I mean, we try to take the client's message and combine it with some maybe pop culture references. And lucky for us, we get to work with some top brand names like Nike, Jordan, Warner Brothers, movies like The Hunger Games. We just did the NFL experience in Times Square. We keep really busy working with those types of brands and messages, and it's really easy for us to tell those stories because all we're doing is translating what they want and their brand message into something that is a physical experience for the consumers.
Is that where all this is going, or maybe that's where this is at now? Because, you know, I walked in here and I was immediately just drawn to the Batmobile thing where you can design your own Batmobile. Now, I just happen to like Batman, but I think if it was anything else, I mean, we walked through here before and the Twitter wall, like I was moving the globe and then going to like Australia and seeing live tweets as they were popping up. They were geotagged. Before we were looking at cutaways of the human body, and you can just do that by sliding a monitor, which you designed. So, I mean, is that where all this is going? Because, you know, we think of telling a story, and it's much more than just clicking on a website, looking at an ad, or getting a newspaper and looking at an ad.
Well, I think the immersive experience is what really draws people in. And we've always been that company who we're kind of not the final sale of a product. We're the ones who design something kind of like we call ourselves like the booth attractors. We'll design those booth attractors to have to draw people into this cool, exciting, colorful, fun, immersive experience. And I think that is where it's heading. It's something that's immersive and you feel it and you can sense it and you can hold something in your hand and engage with that content. We built something for Marvel Universe Live. You could take a Thor's hammer and then just like a carnival game, like the strength, what is that called?
Yeah, like hit the, you know, the ring, yes, the bell or whatever, yes, right.
So you could take the Thor's hammer and then like pound it on the monitor actually, and it will trigger an explosion. And that kind of thing is what draws people in. We're like, oh my God, I want to be Thor for him.
Yeah, that's really cool. And like this, you could be kind of like Batman designing your Batmobile. What is the latest technology? I know that you like to focus on story, but I mean, what are people coming to you saying, hey, Brian, you have to help us out. We want this. What is that?
Well, I think the biggest thing right now is augmented reality and virtual reality, or a mixed reality, which is kind of a combination of each, such as like the Microsoft HoloLens. We've had experience with all of them. Depends on what you're going for, what the client is going for. We try to avoid VR just because it's a very singular experience. Until then, maybe the next generation comes around where it's a little easier to use, a little less clunky. I mean, I have one at home. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm being a hypocrite again, but I do love it. It's just a very singular experience. So you can't share that experience with others very easily. Like I said, until the next generation comes out, maybe that would be so much better. I think the shared experience is really the next level of things. It's not, depending on what the technology is, it's the shared experience, I think, of experiencing an adventure or something together. I mean, look at, I grew up in the 80s. I mean, my time in the 80s was spent playing video games, and that was on the TI-99/4A or the Commodore 64. I mean, I played Adventure and all the Infocom games, and those were great, and those are text adventures. And when I remember those back in my memory, those were the most visual experiences I've ever had. Yeah. You know, but it's just a text thing. It was all in my imagination.
M1interactive.net is the website, so check that out. Man, what a cool space that you've got humming along here, this business. A lot of cool things happening here at M1 Interactive. Brian Dressel is the founder and the president and the owner of M1 Interactive. Hey, Brian, thanks for having us over. It's a great story, a great local story, a success story, and keep doing what you're doing because, man, this place is cool and you're putting out some great things.
Thank you, Mike. This is great. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Again, m1interactive.net is that website. Check out some of the really cool things that happened that have come out of this very space here in Chicago. This is Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Steven. We'll take a short break and be right back here on 720 WGN. WGN. Good morning. Mike Steven here with you. Right now, listening to some local music here on Outside the Loop from a band called Little Church. You can check them out online, littlechurch.bandcamp.com. They have a show coming up this Wednesday, January 24th at Shuba's in Chicago. It's a free show, free local music this Wednesday at Shuba's. Each week, I love to feature local music, and this week, hearing some jams from Little Church. And occasionally in the Chicago Reader, you will see the column, The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. He is also known as Steve Krakow. The strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, as we are prone to do, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi machine as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
Yes, back here once again in the lair, the apartment of Steve Krakow here in the Ukrainian Village. And Steve, this week we are still most definitely in the winter blues. And I'll tell you, some of these blues guys, their names are just fantastic. This is one of the greatest ones. Daddy Stovepipe is who you're profiling, who did his thing here in Chicago.
believe it or not, there was another daddy stovepipe in the day and a sweet papa stovepipe.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. So this guy, Daddy Stovepipe, originally from the South, Daddy Stovepipe, not his given name, not his birth name.
No, no, it's the much more banal Johnny Watson.
Johnny Watson.
Yes.
Now, what year was Johnny Watson, who will go on to become Daddy Stovepipe, what year was he born?
1867.
1867, born right after the Civil War, a couple years. Is this the oldest person you've ever profiled?
I think so. I'm not totally sure. I have covered some other, like, sort of pre-war blues guys like him, but he is pre-war.
Post-Civil War.
Well, some people... He's one of the very first blues musicians ever recorded, and they can't really agree on who was the first, but it seems kind of unanimous that he's the first one to play a harp on a record.
Really? So he's the one, huh?
He's the one. I mean, that, you know, people just, you say blues and people think of a harmonica immediately.
Sure.
So yeah, he might be, it seems like... You know, they could dig out some acetate and find out that some guy was maybe doing it first, but it seems like historians agree that he's the first to play one on a record.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. So,
like a blues record.
Well, the blues record, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. He kind of becomes like this one-man band thing. But tell us the whole story here, because he comes to Chicago eventually and he starts doing his thing.
So, he was born in Mobile, Alabama, but just not much known about his early life, since it's sort of like, you know... pre-recorded musical history or something like that. And, you know, it's an interesting snapshot, though, because he played a 12-string guitar in Mexican mariachi bands, and then later he toured the Midwest in kind of in a traveling minstrel show. And then it just seemed like he played every kind of music at some point. He played, like, Zydeco, and it just seemed like in those days there wasn't really these divisions, you know, and maybe even the blues was not a very... solidified thing, you know, as to what that was, you know.
Yeah, so he comes from Alabama, he comes up to Chicago, and he starts to play in all these different bands, different types of music, and he gets known as Daddy Stovepipe because he was playing on Maxwell Street and the Top Hat, right?
Yeah, yeah, he came here in the 20s, and he was sort of like a one-man band and got his name because of his Top Hat. And then he actually recorded in Indiana in 1924.
Wow.
Yeah. A song called Sundown Blues and another one called Stovepipe Blues. And yeah, those are the ones that people say that might be the earliest blues harp playing going on. His wife was known as Mississippi Sarah, a.k.a. Sarah Watson.
And Mrs. Stovepipe.
A.k.a. Mrs. Stovepipe.
Right.
Yes. And he recorded 12 sides with her, six EPs for Vocalion and Bluebird. And she was an accomplished jug player and singer.
Wow.
So, yeah, he kind of got around and played with all sorts of different kind of people. And she passed away in 37, and then he hit the road again. And again, he's playing Cajun music. He's playing Zydeco. He's playing in mariachi bands all over, and he kind of fled Chicago, but then he came back here in 48, seen again on Maxwell Street, and then they recorded him here in 1960 on Maxwell Street at age 93.
So he was still recording at 93.
He was recording, and it's funny because I online there's like reviews and people are like, this is not his best material, and it's like, he's 93, you know. Give him a break. That he was still, I mean, and you know, to be fair, his brand of blues was very quote unquote primitive and sort of like, you know, I mean, very sort of primordial, sort of early, not necessarily, you know, very accomplished, not even like a Robert Johnson or something like that, but very pre-war blues here. So but yeah, so they recorded him, and he actually appears on this compilation, Blues from Maxwell Street, where he's doing kind of like traditional songs, like a Tennessee waltz and stuff like that. But then he passed away 3 years later at 96.
That's a good run.
That's a pretty good run. He had an operation, and it just didn't work out. But He was in an unmarked grave up until 2012.
Yeah, that's crazy. So this was an unmarked grave that he was in, like you said, up until 2012, and that's been rectified?
Yeah, he's at Restvale Cemetery in Alsip, and there was a benefit, basically. I guess there's this nonprofit organization called Killer Blues, and they do this event in Michigan, the White Lake Blues Festival, and it was basically a benefit to get this poor guy a headstone, who was clearly an innovator and early in the game.
So, sure.
Yeah, he finally got one in 2012.
Well, congratulations, Daddy Stovepipe.
Yes.
Wow, I've never heard of Daddy Stovepipe. I love the blues. I love playing the harmonica. Did not know the fun fact about him being one of the first playing harmonica on a blues record, if not the first.
Yeah.
Daddy Stovepipe, so he's from Alabama. He came up to Chicago, born in 1867.
Oof.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he was doing his thing.
And it sounds like he had a pretty, you know, not necessarily a hard life, but a somewhat itinerant life and playing outside a lot and traveling a lot. And the guy lived till 96.
How about it?
So there's, you know, you eat all the health food and jog all you want, probably, and you might still drop dead, but if you lead a life like Daddy Stovepipe, you might make it to 96.
You'll live till like 115.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Check out the Secret History of Chicago Music in the Chicago Reader. You can pick up a hard copy, or you can check it out online at chicagoreader.com. You'll see what Steve is hand-drawing in the Reader. This week, profiling Daddy Stovepipe, Steve Krakow, local musician, music historian, and artist, and just all-around good guy. Thanks for having us over to your lair of an apartment, and stay warm during these winter blues.
Wear your stovepipe hat.
Man, I woke up this morning, mama, and it's sundown blue. Woke up this morning,
how about that?
And it's sundown.
Daddy Stovepipe, thank you, Mr. Krakow. One of the first blues musicians ever recorded, and looks like the first one to play harmonica on a blues record. How about it? Check it out on page 30 of the Chicago Reader. I've got it.
Hey, Mike.
Right here. Yes, sir.
How far back does that recording go?
What year was this recording?
Yeah.
I think it was early 20th century.
Well, yeah, right. It had to be like 1920s.
Yeah,
that's 20s. Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, born in 1867.
Wow.
That's crazy. Crazy. Daddy Stovepipe. And he was playing a lot here in Chicago. Really cool story. Thank you, Mr. Krakow. This is Outside the Loop. Mike Steven here with you. We'll take a short break and be right back after these here on 720 WGN. WGN, good morning. This is Outside the Loop. Mike Steven here with you on this Saturday morning. Welcome to the program. Nice to have you along. Right now, listening to some local music from the band Little Church. Check out littlechurch.bandcamp.com for their website. They have a show coming up this Wednesday. That's January 24th, 8 p.m. show at Shuba's, at the corner of Belmont and Southport in Chicago. It is a free show, so go on and check out some free local music. Each week I love to feature local music on this program, so if you are a musician or a singer-songwriter and you've got some tracks that you would like to send on over, you can do that through WGNradio.com, and we'll play those songs and mention the gigs you have coming up this week here in some nice chill tunes from Little Church. Back in September, we checked in on this show with an organization called the Resurrection Project. That is a group based in Pilsen that works on building communities and neighborhoods, and they do a lot of work with Chicago's immigrant population. And in that conversation, we discussed how the local immigrant community was responding to policies that were coming out of the White House that had to do with immigration. Well, here we are in January now of 2018, and the immigration saga seems to be continuing. Ere Rendon joins us once again. She is the Vice President of Immigration Advocacy for the Resurrection Project. Check them out online, resurrectionproject.org. Ere, welcome back to Outside the Loop. Nice to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me again.
So I said this is, man, this is like a saga, and I think it kind of is, and it seems that it depends on the week. Sometimes it depends on the day when we talk about immigration and the policies that are being put out there by the White House. So recently, most recently, a federal court ordered that the government should accept DACA renewal applications. And again, DACA stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, having to do with those immigrants who were brought here as children. They didn't have any choice. They were brought to the United States as children. And the Resurrection Project, your organization, has created some local DACA renewal legal clinics that are coming up. Briefly, tell us what those are all about.
Yeah, so the judge basically ordered USCIS to start accepting DACA applications as it was before September 5th when President Trump rescinded DACA. And then last weekend, we did receive information that USCIS was accepting DACA renewal applications. So we quickly started organizing ourselves and making sure that the immigrant community knew that they could come to us, or there's other service providers as well, to renew their DACA, right? And so every Tuesday and Thursday, at least until the injunction is overturned, we'll be helping people from 9 to 7 to renew their DACA, given that it's probably a short window. We expect the Department of Justice already announced that they filed a notice to appeal, and so we think that this window is closing, and so we're trying to help as many people as possible.
People who are affected by this can renew, and you know, we should put that out there, that this is a program where you do have to reapply. You do have to keep renewing this status, and so what you're doing is you're trying to give these individuals assistance with that.
Yeah, so with DACA, everybody has to renew every 2 years. It's just a 2-year temporary protection of deportation and work permit. And when what happened in September was they were only accepting DACA applications that expired before March 5th. So obviously only about 20% of DACA applicants were able to renew. Right now, basically anybody who wants to submit an application for renewal is free to do so. And we're hoping that USCIS does process them all. It's $495 that everybody has to come up with. We are, you know, trying to raise as many funds as possible for to provide scholarships for this as well. So it's a larger pool of people who can renew, including people whose DACA had expired. And that was actually something that was different after the September 5th rescission of DACA.
You know, this immigration issue is really, it's been a roller coaster. It's been, I think, a lot of ups and downs, and especially if I remember correctly, for you, because you personally are a DACA recipient, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah, it has been a roller coaster since the night of the elections, when then nominee Trump won, it was a roller coaster in the sense of like every month was something different. This is minute by minute. Every minute is different. You don't know how to phrase it to the community of what they can and what they can't do. One minute you know that you're being used as a pawn, and you still want to protect your DACA, and we still want to pass the Clean Dream Act. And so it's been a very difficult few months, and then particularly week.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine that. And I want to ask you, I mean, how are you doing? How is the local immigrant community doing, especially those who are affected by DACA? I know that you are in the heart of Pilsen, which there's a wonderful immigrant community in that neighborhood in Chicago. But how are people in that community doing with all this stuff?
You know, right after the election, we did see a lot of fear in our communities, and it was paralyzing. We had a lot of businesses that were affected. Folks weren't coming out of their houses. But I think now, the communities are resilient. They're understanding what their rights are. They know if ICE comes to their house, they don't have to open the doors. They know that if ICE approaches them on the street, they don't have to answer any questions. And so I think folks are, arming themselves with their rights. Some folks are are applying for DACA if they can. If we're given the opportunity to, we all, you know, we show that we do come forward. It happened when we won driver's licenses in Illinois. It happened when we won DACA. And so folks are just moving forward and, you know, trying to push for the best and trying to hold our elected officials accountable to pass the DREAM Act.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's what you have to do. That's what you can do. And you said keep moving forward. And boy, I applaud you for doing that, because I think part of this is to try to destroy or shatter that narrative that President Trump has put out there, that these immigrants are, they're bad people, they're criminals, they're the worst kind of people that are coming here. And I think, you know, just in talking to and visiting areas like Pilsen and dealing with people in these communities, personally, you see some really wonderful, I mean, some really wonderful people that are doing great things. And I think you just have to keep being you to show the world that, you know, this narrative is not correct.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Illinois has always been a welcoming state for immigrants, Chicago in particular, a welcoming city. And I think that, you know, we know that if we didn't have the diversity that we have in Chicago, it wouldn't be the attraction that it is. It wouldn't be as beautiful and vibrant as it is. And so I think for folks that live in this area, it's a little bit different. And you know that the rhetoric that you're hearing coming out of Washington isn't actually the truth of what we see in our community.
Well, your community is great. Like I said, a lot of great people, really important stuff coming out of your community. And you think about Pilsen and other communities in Chicago that have a very strong immigrant community. I mean, the culture, the arts, what is in these communities, I think, is really a treasure. And I know that at the Resurrection Project, you work with these communities, you work with these neighborhoods to try to strengthen them and to contribute to our society. I think it's wonderful. The Resurrection Project is online at resurrectionproject.org. You can get all the information about that organization, again, based in Pilsen, at resurrectionproject.org. Ere Rendon is the Vice President of Immigration Advocacy. Ere, we'll continue to watch this issue. And again, thank you for your time and best of luck with everything. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, and thanks for inviting us and keeping this issue, you know, in front and center as it should be.
Absolutely, and I think this is a very human issue. This is about people, and we need to be thinking about this, and hopefully the conversation will continue. I'm sure it will here in Chicago and nationally, so let's have a healthy conversation. Again, check out resurrectionproject.org. You're listening to Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Steven right here on 720 WGN. Mike Steven wrapping up the 588th edition of Outside the Loop here on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Colin for producing this morning. Thanks to Dave Schwann for doing news. Thanks to Lou for clearing his throat and Bob Ferguson for being our engineer. Hi,
you know, have you noticed the mayhem guy for Allstate?
Yeah, I love that guy.
Yeah, I love that guy. And did you happen to notice that he, in the beginning of the new year, he had like a New Year's resolution?
Okay.
Where he wasn't the mayhem guy anymore.
Who was he?
Well, he said he's going to be helpful. Like he's lying on a road with like he's a flare.
Uh-huh.
You know, so people, well, he goes, I'm not going to be mayhem. My New Year's resolution is to be, you know, there for you to help protect you. And like they did a bunch of commercials about how the mayhem guy is now going to be your safety guy.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Then he says he's there in that same like he's pretending like he's a flare, and he says, no, I'm gonna be here. He goes, and then he says, what? You can't even make it 2 weeks with your New Year's resolution? And then he gets up and he blows out his candle, and then somebody bangs into the side of the car that he's trying to protect. What happened to your New Year's resolution to be on time?
Oh, it's out the window. It's out the window. I mean, it's like every other New Year's resolution, Lou.
Right. I mean, it was like it was one day.
It was 2 days.
Yeah, but I was off last week.
Oh, that's right. I was so on time last week. It was crazy. Hey, I got to tell you, I'm doing the WGN Radio Instagram takeover today.
Really?
So I'm in charge of the WGN Radio Instagram account.
Take it easy. No, don't go over to... and I know what's going to happen. You're going to go down to what's the place under the
Billy Goat?
Billy Goat.
Yeah, I'll just be there all day. It'll be okay. Check-ins from the Billy Goat every half hour.
Right, cheeseburger.
I'm gonna come up. Can we shoot a little video?
Absolutely.
For the fans, for the Lou fans out there.
Absolutely.
All right, love you.
I love you more.
So much love around here. Thank you, Lou, and thank you for listening to Outside the Loop. I'll talk to you again next time right here on 720 WGN. We'll be right back.